Okay, we're in the middle of Perek Yoel, Perek Dalet. Yes, there we began Pasuk Dalet and Hay. Dalet and Hay on page 252. Rabbi Yisai, please. Page 252. We did yesterday Pasuk Dalet and Hay, and we began to learn some of the Mefarshim. Let's just read the Pasuk again very quickly. Pasuk Dalet spoke about Tsor and Sidon. Hashem is complaining, why did you get involved in attacking and taking advantage of the vulnerability of Klal Yisrael? What do you have to do with anything? Why there's no legitimate reason why you should hate the Jews? V'gam ma atem li, what do you have against me? Tsar v'tzidayin. V'chol galilis pelashis, all of the regions of pelashis, which you explained to me yesterday, refers to the south. Philistia, is that how you pronounce it? Okay, pelashis, the Palestinians.
Yeah.
The region of the south.
No, not Palestinians.
I mean, what? Philistines?
Yeah.
The Philistines.
There's no such thing as Palestinians.
Hagimul atem mishalmin alai. The pasuk says that, are you coming to take revenge against me? Bein gomlim atem alai. Are you coming to start up with me for the first time? Is this what you're trying to do? I have never done anything harmful for you. There is no reason why you should attack and cause harm to my chosen nation. And therefore, as a punishment, kal mehera ashiv gemulchem biroshchem. Swiftly will I punish you, will I return your evil upon your heads. That implies, by the way, that if the other types of hatred that we've mentioned, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we discussed yesterday, other nations where all the different types of anti-Semitism, if possibly they have a complaint, they have some type of complaint that it's different than just hatred for no other reason, then Hashem does not punish them immediately. This idea, this implication, over here it's kal mehera, swift response, because you have absolutely no reason to hate the Jews. We discussed yesterday when it came to Yishmael and Esav, they were rejected. They were rejected, so therefore their hatred stems out of insult. And then we discussed when they were recruited by Hashem to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, the problem was they got carried away, they went overboard, and thus they need to be punished. In those examples, it seems to say, I don't know, maybe what I'm saying is a little bit too much of a stretch, but in those other types of hatred, it starts with something, I can't say the word legitimate, I can't say that, but it starts with epis, that there's something there, how it all started. And therefore, Hashem will certainly punish them, din v'cheshbon, for what they've done, but their punishment will not be in a state of kal mehera. Kal mehera is only given when there is absolutely no reason for what they have done. They have done something out of pure, pure hatred. Then the punishment is swift in coming.
Yeah.
What
is meant by swift? When are we talking?
Well, Tsarvitzin doesn't exist.
Wait a second. Swift would imply that right after it happens, that there's going to be this retribution. But if we're talking about the end of times, then
so maybe this is not the end of times. Maybe over here Hashem was addressing the other nations in the first few psukim that we started Perek Dalet and Enechadam. Those nations will wait until the end of days. But when obviously when Yoel is speaking, he's speaking during the times of the Aseret, during the times of Malchus Yisrael. He's saying that Tsar v'Tzil, you're not going to have to wait for the end of days to be obliterated. Your obliteration will happen way, way before. And indeed, Tsar v'Tzidon today, as far as we know, don't exist. So Edom, Yishmael, the nations, all these things that we discussed yesterday, they're still around. They're still around, they're still kicking. So when are they going to be punished? End of days. But Tsar v'Tzidon, look, the Nevuah came true. They don't exist today. Why don't they exist? Because the Kodesh Baruch Hu already punished them before the end of days, because the nature of their hatred was that much worse. And that's a lesson for us, that if a person, Rachman Litzlan, gets involved in a machlekes that they have no connection to, then there's something, there's a concept called kal mehera. Then we read Pasuk, hey, es kaspi
u zechavi. This week's October, you have the regal katona saftir. So it's of course,
Yom Shonim Be'enecha Kiyom Esmol. And so the God, it's like...
One day.
One moment,
right?
Yeah,
right.
It's just a moment. So to you, right. It's a thousand
right.
years.
But even for the goyim, it's, but at least from our perspective,
yeah.
From our
yeah.
perspective, it's still a thousand years. It's
right.
still a very long time.
Right.
But even when it comes to tzarv, it seems that we did not have to wait until the end of days. We already know that they don't exist. So their punishment came very swift, and that's a very powerful limud musar. But if a person does something himself, and there's absolutely no reason for his behavior, it's just irrational, it's just out of outright nonsense, hatred, then Rachmana Litzlan, the person has to recognize that there's something called, a principle called Kal Mehera. You have this idea expressed very, very, very precisely, expressed here by Yoel. Obviously, there's a lesson. The person can, in a person, if a lawyer or some type of advocate, some type of defense attorney, can at least give some logic behind why a person behaves in a certain way, then it's not going to deny him, it's not going to prevent him from being punished. The person is responsible for his actions. But you see here a concept that if there is some excuse that is, it's not an excuse, these are not good words, but if there's some cause where it happened, whatever the proper words are, at least there is a benefit that there's a delay. The punishment is not swift. And the delay obviously is an advantage to the perpetrator, because he can do teshuvah during that period of time before he actually suffers the consequences. And then Pasuk Hey, we learned yesterday, as Kaspi Zuchavi Lakhtem, these Hashem is putting against Sorin Sidon, you have plundered the gold and the silver and the gold of my nation, Umahmadai Hatayim, and my delightful things, my desirous things, you've taken into your tents. Now notice, just notice that first comes Kesef and then comes Zahav. This is always a topic of discussion, which one is more Choshuv?
Gold.
Is gold more Choshuv or is silver more Choshuv? The Beis HaMikdash, what's the order? It says, V'chuli chum me'ez k'mashuzos ha'chum ha'shayinu, Zahav, Kesef, u'nechayshes. It says gold first. Zahav, Kesef.
Because the guy Machshava Aron Starak the night.
Yeah.
So there's always a Machshava Aron.
Okay.
So even if you have a schus for something, you're Machshava Aron.
Okay, that's a separate issue. Fine, separate issue. But we just discussed before, where does the hatred come from? If there is a cause, we're learning in this psukim a very powerful idea. If there is a cause for the hatred, you're fully responsible. You're responsible. There's going to be retribution without question. However, there's a delay. There's a delay in punishment. If there is no cause for the hatred, it's just irrational, then there is no delay. The punishment is instant. Stone va'amora were obliterated. They were obliterated. They were obliterated very quickly. I mean, I don't know, quickly... We have to get into what was the rebellion against Hashem. Why did it says they were chatoyim? What's the pasuk? Chatoyim v'ra'oyim l'Hashem me'od. What does that mean? Did they have a reason to rebel against Hashem? There's never a reason. Again, the words are very dangerous words. There's never a reason. Chas v'shalom. There's never a reason. There's never an excuse. There's never an excuse. Right? There's never an excuse. But did they have something in their mind to play with that caused them to be chatoim l'Hashem, rishoim v'chatoim l'Hashem me'ot? Well, look at their punishment. Their punishment was swift. It was just, they just didn't wake up the next day. Okay, there was just nuclear, whatever happened over there. That, to a degree, is what's called kal mehera. It wasn't a prolonged process. If it's a prolonged process, there's an advantage. Because maybe you can survive, maybe you'll do teshuvah, maybe you can negotiate. There are techniques when you're in a prolonged state.
You mean like Nineveh, that was prolonged?
Yep. Was it prolonged? I mean, maybe, okay, they did teshuvah, and they were saved, but they know that's only half of the story.
Yeah, it's only 10%. All right,
but we read about they did teshuvah. Sodom, puff of smoke. Other nations of the world, it was a very prolonged, even when the punishment came upon these nations, it didn't happen, it wasn't a nuclear missile that just wiped them out in 1 second. there was galus, there was suffering, there was famine, there was starvation. It's a prolonged process. So over here, it's introducing us to an idea of what's called kal mehera oshiv gemulchem b'roishchem. And that is given specifically to nations who HaKadosh Baruch Hu explicitly says, you have zero reason. There is absolutely no cause, no reason, no logic behind your behavior. It's just outright wickedness. And for outright wickedness, there is no delay. Punishment comes swiftly. Yeah?
Yeah, I'm wondering if this expression, it's really a double expression, kal mehera.
Yes, it's repetitious. You're right.
We've heard the expression, like, vadatem mehera. We have heard expressions of kal.
So maybe kal doesn't mean time. Kal mehera means time. Kal means
light.
It means light. What does it mean light? It means
that
it
means swift. In other words, like a bird flies swiftly because it's lighter than air.
Right, but
it's above the air.
But is kal related to time, or does kal have a deeper meaning? What does the Mitzvah David say?
Kal is rosh.
See, the Mitzvah says it means time. The Mitzvah see an inyan and mihirus. Swiftness,
yeah,
that's time. The Mitzudos doesn't say that. Mitzudos says the word kal relates to time. Mihiros. So that means it's exactly the same thing as mehero. So there's poetic repetition, just an emphasis. But who says all the Mefarshim learn like that? What does the Malbim say in the Perush HaMilois? Kal mehero bizman. So Hitaka disagrees. You see, Hitaka disagrees. He disagrees the Malbim. Malbim says the word mehero is bizman. Kal means bipu'ula. Light.
Yes.
It means that Kadosh Baruch Hu just—he doesn't pay much attention. Kadosh Baruch Hu just presses the button.
It means with minimal effort.
Exactly. It's like Sodom and Amorah.
Right.
Puff of smoke. Okay. One moment gone. Other nations, Hashem is more involved. The process is more deliberate. There is a lot of calculation. There's calculation. It's not kal. Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's kaved. Kadosh Baruch Hu enters into the picture. And dishes out punishment, different types of punishment to every single person based upon what they deserve. Why? Because at least they have not an excuse, but at least they have a cause or a reason how their hatred evolved, and they're guilty, so they're going to be punished. But it's more complex. Tzor v'tzidoin represents hatred just for the sake of hatred, nothing else. It therefore demands a whole new level of punishment, what do we call over here, kal mehera. Okay, let's go further. Now, let's see, we did yesterday the Rashi and the Mitzudos and we did the Radak. So let's pick it up with the Malbim. The Malbim Pasuk Dalid and Hey on page 253, the Gam. V'hinehu umos shemosarti oisam biyadam k'mo ashur bavel uheim rak kifrizu al hamida. Okay, this is going back. We explained this idea already a few times. Ratut is that they went and they overdid it. They went overboard. They were given permission, and in fact, they were recruited to punish Klal Yisrael. Why then are they accountable? Punished because they went overboard. Aval ikar hadavar sh'asu lohem ra hoya b'gzeres Hashem. But the ikar hadavar, what they did to Klal Yisrael was legitimate. This that the goyim, Nebuchadnezzar, Bavel, and Edom, they exiled Klal Yisrael, they're not going to be punished for that. That was kedin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu recruited them that they should do this. So they cannot be held accountable for that. Why are they going to be punished? Because they went hifrizu. They went overboard. They
what is that word?
What? Hifrizu? Exaggerated. Exaggerated. Yeah.
It's a common word.
Hifrizu, look up in Google Translate. Hifrizu must mean they exaggerated, they went way, way overboard. Further in the Malbim, Aval, Mo Atem Li Atem Tsarvid Sidon, V'chol Gililos Piloshes, Shaloi Mosarti Es Yisrael Bietchem. Klol, it's none of your business. I never recruited you, I never gave you permission to go bring to punish them. Mitziva Eschem L'Hara Lohem. Whoever told you to cause pain to Klal Yisrael? Hagimol atem mishalmin li. V'chi gomalti eschem ro'ah. Did I ever bring upon you harm? Did I ever cause you to suffer? And therefore you have bad feelings against me and you want to take revenge against me. And the way you'll take revenge against me is by harming my chosen nation. V'chi gomalti eschem ro'ah shebavura. Because of what I've done to you, atem mishalmin li gimul ro'ah tachas ro'ah. Nonsense. Show me. Mo horo'ah. Asher Asisi Lochem, show me any harm I've ever caused you in your existence. The Yesh Hevdel, now here over here, he's coming to explain the word Gimul. The word Gimul is over here, is a very nice mal when we come. This word is used all over Tanakh. Gimul. What is Gimul? Gimul means payback. Payback. So you can pay back a person for both good and bad. If a person caused you harm, so you pay back revenge. You pay back punishment. And gemul also can mean reward. If someone does you a favor, there's gemul. You've been good to me, I will repay you with good. So gemul is a powerful word. It does not mean punishment. It does not mean reward. It depends on the context. If what one has done good, the gemul will be good. If a person has done to his fellow harm, then the gemul means he will take revenge. He'll pay back harm. There will be punishment. So we hear that's how we have to. He comes to explain this word. Hagemul atem mishal min li. V'chi gemalti eschem ro'ah. I'm sorry, that's the second wide line. V'chi v'yesh hevdel bein goymel gemul. And here he's coming to say the difference between the two is the repetition, goymel gimul versus mishalem gimul. What do you have a flourish like this? Unbelievable. Explains mom, she hits the nail on the head. Ha mishalem gimul hu shekibel ro'o mechaveira. Beautiful Malvin. That when we use the word mishalem, that automatically forces us to understand. Are you okay, Ramachol? Yes.
I'll get it.
Okay, don't. He's in labor. He's in labor now. Soon going to come out. Hamashalim gemul hu shekibul ro'o mechaveroi. Al yidei eva v'sina, through hatred, the sheyesh loy olav, that one fellow has against his friend, the one that's been the victim of this hatred, mishalim kimidasoi ro'ah tachas ro'ah. Aval ha-goymel gemul, when we use the repetition, goymel gemul yitzuyar, it's described, gam sheloi kibal ra mimenu, rak she'oseh loy ra mitzad ho'eva, sheyesh loy olav. So when it says here the word, double the repetition, that means you are initiating. And normally gemul means to pay back, but not in this case. In the second part of this pasuk, does not mean to pay back, because exactly what Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying to the Tzoran Sidoin, are you coming to start up with me? For better lack of vocabulary that I have, those words just sit in my mind. What are you starting up with me? Are you taking revenge, or are you starting up with me? Taking revenge, why take revenge? What did I do to you that you want to take revenge? So it must then be, you're starting up with me. The way you express starting up is with the repetition, ha-goymel gemul. The way you express revenge is with the term, mishalem gemul. Yeah.
So, I was thinking about how in davening we say, gomel chasadim tovim, right?
Okay.
And we also say,
ooh, wow. So mishalem gimul chol oivei nafshenu, that's clearly payback. They've done harm, now Hashem will give retribution. But when it comes to chesed, beautiful, Hashem initiates. It doesn't say the word mishalem, it means that goymel, Hashem is goymel chasodim tovim. This is not mishalem gemul, it's not goymel gemul. It's more like...
I don't think we ever see a goymel gemul.
A double. Okay, but it's without the word mishalem, even if you omit the word mishalem, you just say gemul, according to the Malbim, it seems to be saying it means to initiate. And we're describing the kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He does with us goodness, even though we don't deserve it. There's nothing that we have done that's deserving that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should reimburse us or should give us in return.
It's, what do you say about Birchus Hanayim?
Hagoymel chasodim to
tovil.
So it's two expressions of goymel, and you want to connect that bracha to what it says over here, even though the two words are not together. Hagoymel chayovim tovim. So it says, say with the whole bracha again. So it says with Goyim in the beginning of the pasuk, and it says at the end of the pasuk, one time each.
And we answer in double Hashem also.
How do we answer? Mi shagam cha kol tov, hu yigam cha kol tov v'sela. Okay, so you say that it says the word Goyim twice, even though they're not next to each other, but it's close enough, and therefore, from based upon the Malbim, we have an appreciation that it means to initiate. Beautiful. That when a person is a recipient of the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't deserve it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so good to us, he gives us things that we do not deserve. Just like it's been used over here in reference to the goymel, like, that does not go away. The word goymel either means good or bad. It's a power of a word. Depends on the context. When it says mishalem gemul, it means reimbursement. It means payback. When it says goymel gemul, it means initiation. So when we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kindness to us, we do not say the word mishalem, because there's nothing that we could do that we could be deserving of the kindness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. Hashem always gives us more than we deserve. Sometimes we deserve nothing and He gives us kindness. Sometimes maybe we do a little mitzvah, but what Hashem gives us is far, far more than what we deserve. So it's always begeder, a double goymel. It's always begeder, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a goymel without the word mishalem. Because the word mishalem, according to the Malbim, means HaKadosh Baruch Hu is repaying what he owes. And chesed is always more than we deserve. Very, very good. Gvaldik.
Along those lines, there's a marsha at the end of the chapter that says that whatever happens, whether sometimes it's good or bad, you're happy to know since it came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's for your best interest and heart. As opposed to somebody who just did it on his own, that's your daily bibishua secha, you know, when you get saved, so that's what he says in the pasuk, that you say bishua so, or gila mitzvah bishua so. It's more rewarding to know that whatever happened to you happened because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to do it to you. You perceive it as bad sometimes, but you realize if it came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's as your best interest at heart.
But I have a question.
It says, keep going all alive.
Right.
At the very end.
Yeah. So in other words, that's his way of translating what it happens from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I appreciate your chesed. Sometimes I don't feel it, but as long as I know that it came from you, I'm satisfied.
My question is, you know, there's another rule. Hashem does mida k'neged mida. How you act towards others, it's how he pays you back.
Okay, but that's a separate issue. But in the Shemona Esrei, when we're praising Kadosh Baruch Hu, of course, there is both. A person does good, Kadosh Baruch Hu pays back mida k'neged mida. But more often than not, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us more than we deserve. Of course, there's payback also. Hashem gives reward. Hashem is nemet in l'shalim reward. Sochar tov l'chol abotchem v'shim chabemet. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he also reward. But besides what we deserve, Hashem gives us what we do not deserve. He gives us more. Eilu v'eilu. No such thing. You can't say that. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes us more than we deserve? Chas v'shalom. That cannot possibly be. There's no such thing as that. That's connected our hashkafa. There's no such thing in Yadus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes a person more than he deserves. If we do find a person is suffering Yisurim, Chazal say, so there's a whole Gemara, he should make an investigation. Why? What did I do? Did I do this? Did I do this? Did I do this? And then the person makes a calculation and he has absolutely done nothing wrong and there's no reason why he should suffer. Let's say you're a Mekubal and you've gone through all of your Gilgulim.
What we learned in Egypt.
You got all your Gilgulim And in all of my Gilgulim in this world, I've never done something that I should deserve this punishment. No, that's punishment. Biddle Torah is punishment.
But ultimately, you should look at...
That's part of the Mogos Vaita. That's also part of it. The person, that's also you've done Navera, you've done Torah.
You're talking about Yisur Shulahava.
Oh, exactly. So the final, at the very verdict, after everything is said and done, the person cannot find any cause of why he suffers. It's Yisurim HaKadosh Baruch Hu is it's a principle which is beyond our understanding. It's Yisurim Shalava in order to do benefit to the person's neshama. What that means, who knows? Whatever that means, it means. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Yisurim is for the benefit of the neshama. Hashem is not, there's no such thing in Yadus that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu would bring upon a person harm. Yeah?
Is it the concept that sometimes the Sadiqim would have to die because Bnei Yisrael needs to be punished, but because of certain people.
Hashem takes the tzaddik before the time, but Hashem can't take the tzaddik before their time if the tzaddik does not deserve to die.
But I'm saying that I think it's a concept like Gemara that sometimes some tzaddikim might need to die because Bnei Yisrael needs to be punished.
Yeah, but what that means is
still being alive.
I understand. What that means is the tzaddik's time anyway came to die. It's just that under normal circumstances, Hashem would anyway have Rachmanis on the tzaddik, even though his time has come to die. Hashem would let him live another 20 years. But now, there's something in the bigger picture, Klal Yisrael, they have to, for whatever reason, there has to be some event, and if the tzaddik is there, it's not going to happen. So now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to grant an extension to the tzaddik that he does not deserve. But if the tzaddik rightfully deserves to be here in this world, then Hashem cannot. Hashem, the way Hashem made the rules, whatever he wants, but the way Hashem made the rules that he agrees to operate by is he would not take a cause of tzaddik harm that the tzaddik does not deserve. When we find Hashem taking tzaddikim early, it's because anyway the tzaddik's time came long ago, and he's only here as on borrowed time. He's on borrowed time.
Not always does that happen. You see, Avram Avinu, 5 years was shortened.
Oh, so here's in the Kashas. Avram Avinu, he died 5 years before
early,
his time.
Yeah.
So in order not to see Esav Yatzel at Harbos
Ra. So he's
saying over here is that he's saying over here that really Avram Avinu's time was another 5 years. I hear what you're saying. I don't know. You're in good Kashas. What does it mean then?
It was worth it.
What does it mean? Was it worth it? What does that mean? How can you say it's worth it? Can you imagine what the world would be like today? If Avram Avinu would have lived 5 more years, could you imagine the world would have been there's no question, we have to have emuna, the world would be a different place. 5 more years of Avram Avinu being mashpia on this world would have been a different world.
But Hashem took 10 years from Yeshua.
Right, so that's really what he's asking also. So what does that mean exactly? So I told you a very simple answer, which you can probably say about people which the Chazal say, and that's not my answer, in later generations, our generation, is that when you find that these things happen, it's not because they were really meant to, they were taken before their time. They should have been gone a long time ago. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu Berev Chastav, he grants extensions. Hashem always grants extensions to people way beyond their years. So they're anyway living on borrowed time. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu now wants to do something, for whatever his reasons are, and this tzaddik is in the way, so Hashem says, I'm sorry, under normal circumstances, I would give you an extension, but I can't. I have to go and give you, and you already passed your time. Now, can you say that about Avram Avinu? That Avram Avinu was really meant to live a lot shorter, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Avram Avinu was on borrowed time, and now that Esav was Yotzel, is Tarbos Ra, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avram Avinu, I'm sorry, you're anyway on an extension that you don't deserve, and because of these particular reasons, I'm going to have to cut it short now. It's hard to say that by Avram Avinu. It's hard to say that. By Yeshua also, Hashem took away what it meant, he was never meant to live that time.
No,
so it's a good kasha. It's a very good kasha. I don't know the answer.
He dragged out the Muhammad because he wanted that was the thing that...
It's a very... I don't know.
So he supposedly dragged
it out. These dvarim ha'oim din berumai shel oilam. Obviously, you're not going to get answers from me. Okay, that's David was not supposed to live one day. It was supposed to be a Nepho. He was supposed to be a Nephil, and Adam HaRishon, these are Midrashim, these Dvarim Ha'im Din Beruma Shalom. And Adam HaRishon, so because of his chait, so he gave 30 years to David.
70.
70 years. Why only 70? Should have given more. Would have been a different world, right? We don't know these things. Now, I saw... What? I saw a story which I really don't. I don't like this story, but I'll tell it to you because it's on the topic. This type of stories really gets me, irritates me. It says it up, but we're talking about this topic. There's a person. It's in the new book for Rav Chaim that his grandson, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, has a grandson who takes Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shlita has a grandson who has translated into English. Different, he already put out a few books. Arts will publish these books. His Hanhogos relating to various Yomim Tovim. So they wrote this. So now it's on hot off the press are the Hanhogos of Chaim Kanievsky with regard to the Yomim Noiroim. So I was glancing through this book and he writes there a story which I told you I would never say. It's not my style, but you already mentioned this topic. Where there was a fellow who came to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, there was a fellow who was not religious, he was choizer b'shuva, and he worked on himself for 2 years from absolutely being a nothing, to becoming a very great person by being choizer b'shuva. He was a baal tshuva, and then suddenly he was killed. In a car accident, I don't know, he died suddenly. So the family, he came from an irreligious family, and they were shocked. Not just shocked that he died, they were shocked at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How could you do this? How could you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do this? Here was our child, he wasn't religious, and now he invested in the Ribbono Shel Olam by becoming religious for 2 years. He gave up his job, and he did this, he did that, in order to learn and come close to Hashem. And Hashem, you let him die in a bizarre accident? How could this be? It bothered them to no end. And they had a rabbi who, I guess, was the mentor of the person who was Nifter, who was in contact with them, I guess came to Nachum Avel and over the years dealt with them. And they just said, they don't understand. How could this be? How could the Hanhaga? It was a bizarre accident. It's one thing, you know, Hashem should have been Megan. Torah is Megan. Tzadik v'ra mamash. Tzadik v'ra loy. Okay, Tzadik v'ra loy really starts and ends right here. It's the 9 minute. Tzadik v'ra loy, it starts and ends. How do you get it to? But these people, like most of us, don't take Tzadik v'ra loy as an answer. They want answers. So the fellow said he'll go to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. He's anyway going to Eretz, so they'll ask him. So, again, the story is really bizarre. Don't quote me on this. Not my style to say over these type of stories. I really don't like these stories. But Rav Chaim Kanievsky, he told him my so it says in the book, and Rav Chaim Kanievsky thought about it and he said he was supposed to die 2 years ago. But I'm not challenging. Yeah, that's what Chaim Kanievsky. He was supposed to die 2 years ago. That's what Chaim Kanievsky said. Tell that to the family. So this person said to himself, no way. I'm not going to tell this to the family. I'm not suicidal here. As Imam Shechil Hashem, to go back to the family and tell them that the rabbi in Israel said, you know why, rather tell these irreligious people that the reason why your son died was because he was really supposed to die 2 years ago. And now, and the other rabbi, look at these 2 years as a bonus. He said, how does he even know this, Chaim Kanievsky? And say they'll never understand this, to say this. So he put it in the back of his mind. He went back to America, and he continued. They were still in deep mourning, and they kept on asking and asking, and just somehow, I don't know if it was subconsciously, he spit out what Rav Chaim Kanievsky said. And he said to them, he was supposed to die 2 years. The rabbi said he was supposed to die 2 years ago. The family froze, and they said to him, you're right. Wow. You don't know the whole story. 2 years ago, he was in a situation where his life was on the line. And it was mamish, he could have died, whatever the situation was, he could have, should have, whatever happened, he could have mamish died. Exactly 2 years ago. Somehow, he pulled through, he came back 100%. People don't know about all the details. And that's right. The rabbi and the parents accepted this as they heard it. They knew it probably in their subconscious. But when they heard that Chaim Kanievsky, a holy rabbi in Israel, said it, how could he possibly even know this? How could he even know this? And they said it, it somehow brought forth from their subconscious, or maybe their neshama sensed it, that it was taka true. This person was meant to die, and he must have had at that time a hear her teshuva. And then Hashem gave him 2 more years, and in those 2 years he completely changed his life. He was mitahir his neshama to leave this world in a state of tahara. And the parents accepted it.
Wow.
It's an unbelievable story.
Right.
Okay, it's not for everyone, this story. I warn you, these type of stories don't sit well with a lot of people, but...
Why?
What?
Rabbi Sklar told me, in the I still remember Rabbi Sklar told us a similar story in the second grade.
The second grade?
Somebody you who can... was the Chayzah B'Shuva, and he kept his first Shabbos.
Yeah, then he died.
By a car on at the end of Shabbos, he was run over, and the answer that time was, he wanted him to die about Shuva. That's what they... I'm just saying,
okay, these are stories. Rabbi Friend at the Siyam HaShas, not this one, last one. If you remember the past Siyam HaShas, the one that was, whatever, how many years ago was it? Not the last one. The one before, 12 years ago. So in his drasha, he said about Rav Moshe Feinstein, showed to a Levaya. Of a person that was no one even would pay attention to this man. Who is this person? And Moshe was there by the Levaya. Why by the Levaya? So he said this person, the night before, he made a siyum on one daf gemara. And what was the story? The story, I remember all the details, but he said that this person knew zero. He was a tinuk shenishba, nothing from nothing. Remember the story?
His son went to, this is one of his biographies.
And the question was, can he make a siyum? Rav Moshe said, not only can he make a siyum, I'm coming to the siyum. I'm coming on one daf. You're going to see my shas. He's talking about making a siyum on the Gan Shas, 2,711 daf. So our friend was saying, the chashiv was making a siyum on one daf. And this fellow, I think he was a Russian. He knew from 0, 0, 0, and somehow he picked up an article of Gemara. He struggled, he mamish, hard for an enormous amount of time to learn how to read, to learn one daf Gemara. And he asked Rav Moshe, can he make a siyum? Absolutely. Rav Moshe came. And that night after the siyum, he was niftar.
Wow.
How could it be such a thing? Obviously, you see that what you have to say is, you have to have a emunah to say this, okay, it's not for the faint of heart to say this, is that this person was meant to leave the world long before. And for some reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he planted in his mind, he's going to do something, he's going to accomplish something. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you want to accomplish this? I'm going to give you an extension that's not meant to be for you. Because, you know why? I'll tell you the answer. Why? Because for every, you're not going to like what I'm going to say, okay? But for every one story, I'll tell you the answer. I'll tell you why I don't like these stories. For every one story that ends like this, there are 100 stories that don't end like this. And they all have the same, the same exact details. A person, you know, he's not well. You know what? If Hashem lets me live, I'm going to do A, B, and C. And then he dies the next day. I could show you 100 stories on me. For every story, this person, he was not well 2 years ago, right? He was in some type of life-threatening situation. And then it hit him, you know, what's life all about? What is life all about? You know what? If I get better, I'm going to be Chozer Meshuvah. You know something? There are 100 people like that. And 99 of them, they die right away. And this one person, he lived. Hashem gave him at least 2 more years.
Each one has his own
passion. Oh, exactly. You have to have a moon. You have to have a moon. But 99 people, most of us sit in the category of the 99 people. Okay, this is an extreme story of life and death. Okay, let's talk about stories of not life and death, just, you know, success versus failure. So why him and not me? What he has schosava is, he has a special schos. You have to say that. You have to say that. You have to say that there was something unique that you don't know about, and that's why he was zoiche to this. But it's painful for the other 99 people who feel, I also have schusim.
This is one of life's mysteries.
Exactly. So what's the end of the line? The end of the day is, you anyway have to come back to the yisoid, tzadik viraloi. So why go through the whole cycle? Going through the cycle is dangerous because it creates these fantasies, which is not healthy. If you live with emunah peshuta, it's inspirational. Okay.
If you heard the story of Rabbi Kreisberg, what happened to him? He had cancer.
Yeah.
He was deemed that he was going to die terminally. So he went to the Stipler. The Stipler, a little louder, the Stipler told him, we say, you know, in Eilu Devarim,
so if you do this, you're going to be...
He got a lot more years. He did it.
There are many people who tried. The story is so famous.
I know.
It's so famous. And many people tried the same thing.
And they didn't survive.
So what's the answer for those people?
I don't know.
So emunah pshuta. Emunah pshuta. Right? Emunah pshuta.
You got to try.
Absolutely. You have to try. There's no doubt about it. But the bottom line is, after everything is said and done, you have to come on to emunah pshuta. This is my personal feeling. I feel that today there is a lack of focus. If you have both together, emunah pshuta, 100%, and you have inspirational stories, givaldi, you cannot have a better combination. You cannot have. If you're just going to focus on the emunah pshuta, you're going to be very depressed. You need the combination. My critique is that in this generation, what I see, I don't know, maybe I'm totally wrong, is the focus is on inspirational stories only, and emunah pshuta doesn't exist. That's my critique. Both, yeah, you cannot live with one alone. Emunah pshuta alone is not for us. But you have to have it. It has to be there. And then we have inspirational stories. The two together is magic. If you're going to take emunah pshuta and say, you know what, see you later. And the only thing we're going to have today, we're going to focus on inspirational stories. It's very dangerous.
There's something very profound.
Very, because many of the inspirational stories do not... And young children are being brainwashed with only, especially young children, they're only taught inspirational stories. And to teach a young child, you know something? There are no answers. Don't go, you don't know why this happens? I'll show you these great art school books. Look at these books, the inspirational stories. So what you don't understand now, why this terrible event happened to you right now, don't worry, because you're in the middle of the book. The book's not finished yet for you. The story's not finished. And you're going to see, wow, big miracles. And then these children grow up, and guess what? The big miracles don't happen. And whatever happens, the bad things are just... There's no answer for. And they've not been trained and equipped by their mechanchim. You know something? They have to have emunah. Inspirational stories is very good. But when the day is over, remember something. We live in a world where there are no answers. You have to have emunah pshuta. Emunah pshuta is a very tough pill to swallow. And if you're not trained when you're very young to understand what emunah pshuta is, it's very, very hard when you get older to first now deal with emunah pshuta.
Life experience gives them a little bit more.
Okay, that's definitely true. Yeah. Provided that you're told that when you put on that path.
Yeah.
Provided that you put on the path.
Start them off.
If you're not started off with that, there's no such thing as a moon up shoot. Everything is smoke and mirrors, huff and puff, fantasy world. You're living in fantasy island.
I heard something similar from a rabbi, very profound. The Devar Chaim had many children. One of his children said, he could come up with a whole book, a thick book of people that were helping my father. Yeshua's. But I could come out twice as thick, people that weren't helped.
Exactly.
That's such a profound story.
Exactly.
Because people only hear the positive. We don't know.
Exactly. Arash will publish a thing called Living Emunah. Okay, it's a beautiful book of inspirational stories about Emunah. Okay? So it was so popular, they printed a second book. And now they printed a third book. So I think it's a Living Emunah. And now they've translated it into different languages. And it's a bestseller. So I wanted to read. What is it? If everyone is so crazy about this, it's already the third, fourth, fifth printing of line, it must be really good. I got to see what it says there, right? So I read the first book, not entirely, most of the first book. I'm sorry to tell you, it turned me off. It's inspirational stories that are really way out there, way out there. People love the stuff, obviously. They gobble it up. They love the stuff. But I don't know. To me, it doesn't...
You all have happy ending?
Yeah. That's why. Gan Emunah. There's another book they claim...
Garden of Emunah.
It's Breslov.
Also a bestseller.
There's Balei Tshuva. There's a person who says the Torah, and then there's someone who's his writer, his translator, his writer...
Rabbi Brody, I think.
Arash, there are two people. They're very holy people. No doubt about it. Don't get me wrong. So he wrote this book called Gan Emunah. Right? Gan Emunah, Garden, translated into Garden of Faith. And they claim, I read that 6 million copies have been sold of these books. Six million. There are 6 million people in this world that know how to read. Okay, so I figured if there are six, who's reading? I don't know, it's such an exaggerated number. Gesundheit. I can't imagine. How could they say such a thing? 6 million. Who's reading this book? 6 million people. If they can even make a claim, even if it's nonsense, I got to see what it says inside. I got it. And the book is very, very similar to the art scroll Living Emunah. It's very similar, very similar. It's Kabbalistic type of things that inspirational stories. You don't know what's going on behind the scenes in Shemayim when you think it, and the happy endings. Yeah. But it's not definitely not in the category of Emunah Peshuta. Yeah. And if you don't also deal with Emunah Peshuta, these stories I feel are very harmful. Because for him, it worked out very well. If it worked out well for you, not likely. The statistics are way against you.
Yeah, we have to give a disclaimer. You should give a disclaimer.
They don't give a disclaimer. That's exactly the point.
What to say? I was a rebbe for many years, all third grade yeshiva, many, many years. And I used to tell, maybe I did too much, I used to tell all different kinds of stories. One time, it was like a baloney story, you know, about a great Tzaddik in Russia. They were fighting it out. And, you know, the Russia is much stronger than the Tzaddik is struggling. All of a sudden, the Russia comes, and he kills the Tzaddik. The class was quiet. They couldn't believe it. The Tzaddik died. They said, no, Rebbe. They wouldn't accept that ending. They would not accept that ending.
Okay.
They would not... Try it with your nephews and nieces and everything. You'll see they will
but,
not.
But if you would tell them, but if you would tell a third grader only those stories, you would kill them. You would mamish ruin them.
Right. Yes.
Ruin them. That's so right. What is the answer? Balance.
Right. That's right.
Balance.
Right.
There has to be
both
balance.
Are true. Both
there
are
has
true.
To be balance.
Both are true.
You
want to
know
who
should go speak to Holocaust? Russia,
well, not everyone, unfortunately, people that remain faithful.
Right.
But you know, for everyone that remained,
I know. Nobody came out straight. Either you went to the right,
that's
or
very inspirational.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, let's go further. Let's finish up over here. Kal Mehera. Okay, let's go further in page 253. Okay, towards the verb Kal Mehera Ashiv Gbulchem Bereshchem, very swiftly will I punish you. Tsarvitz in Kenev, so the Malbim on page 253, the very, very bottom. It begins a new paragraph where it says Kal Mehera Ashiv Gbulchem Bereshchem in Kenev Loi Amamtin Lochem Ad Ha'esu Achra. It's exactly what someone over here pointed out. Over here, we're discussing the Yoim Hadin, the Acharis Hayamim, Yemois HaMashiach. And when it comes to Tsarvitz, Sidon Hashem says, we're not going to wait. The Acharis Hayamim to do away with Tzarvit Sidoin. The Yoim Adin Osid, Kemosh Shamtin Liyeser HaUmois Rak Amaher Lehoshiv Gimulchem Bimehiro Oy Bizman Hazeh. Unbelievable. That's why Tzarvit Sidoin do not exist. Shabimei Alexander, when exactly did it happen? It happened in Alexander the Great. Alexander Moigdoin, Charvu Tzarvit Sidoin Ufaleshes, Vuhusmu Tel Oilam Shmomo. He made it, he set it. As a mound, an empty, desolate mound of desolation. So indeed, in that, when was Alexander the Great? He was during the Tekufa of the Bais Sheni.
Shimon HaTzadik.
Shimon HaTzadik.
300 BC.
How many years before the destruction of the...
300, about 200 years before the Chorban, approximately 200 years, approximately, maybe less. Approximately between 200 and 100 years, whatever, around that time, before the Chorban Bais Sheni. What? Earlier? The middle, somewhere in the middle. Somewhere in the middle. Yavon, somewhere in the middle, somewhere in the middle. Okay, so therefore, that's why over here, so it's an amazing idea over here that Edom and Yishmael, they're still around. It's been 3,000 years since this Nevuah. But Tsarvit Sidon, very quickly in history, at least in the big picture of history, did they cease to exist. Pasuk Hey, Asher, Meforish Harois Shasul Yishol Shechutz Bima Shekaspi Uzahavi Lekachtem Shani Loi Masati Lechem Lemoinam Kamo Shemasati Lenuchanetzar. Nebuchadnezzar, I gave permission to take the wealth of the Jewish people. But Tsar Vitzidon, I did not. V'gam atem lekachtem oiso mi'atzmechem, chutz mi'ze oi, hoisavtem resha. You've also done evil. And that's going to be the next pasuk. Pasuk Vav tells us more evil things, terrible things that they did. To Kali Shalom, we'll read that a little bit in a few moments. Now let's see here, before we go, let's go to the Lekute. We did that already, fine. Let's just go to another pasuk. What else do they do? Here it says, Pasuk Vav, we're also describing the sins of Tsar Vitzidon. They kidnapped our children, Uvnei Yehud, Uvnei Yerushalayim, the children of Yehud and the children of Yerushalayim, Mechartem Levnei Hayavonim. They kidnapped them, and they sold them as slaves to the Greeks. Leman, why to the Greeks? There are nations that are closer to Eretz Yisrael that were interested in purchasing Jewish children. So why did they have to go and sell people in Tsar Vitzidon? They sell them to Yavon. Yavon is far away. You got to go on the Mediterranean all the way down to the other end. It's a long way to get to Greece, long way to get to Italy, to get all the way down over the.
Greece not so far.
No.
Greece is not that far.
Greece is closer.
Yeah, Italy.
Okay. So that's Rome. Okay, but it's still a journey.
Those days,
it's still a nice journey. It's still a nice journey to get there. So why there were many countries or many islands or many goyim that were willing to purchase the Jewish children, why did they have to ship them so far away? You know why? They wanted to make sure they'll never come back. They realized the Jewish people have such kuchis hanefesh. If you let them live nearby, within range of Eretz Yisrael, they'll discover one day they're Jewish. And they will return naturally to Eretz Yisrael. So in order to make sure they never ever return to Eretz Yisrael, Tsar and Sidon, out of their intense hatred, they bedafka, sent them far, far away to Yavon. Necharetim levnei hayavonim, leman, explicit in the pasuk, harchikom me'al givulam, in order they should be far away from their boundary. Okay, now again, then comes the punishment. Pasuk Zion begins the punishment. So let's read this. Let's just read this before this pasuk very quickly. Just this pasuk, pasuk Vav, in the Mitzudos David. The Mitzudos David on page 252. Pasuk. There is no Mitzudos David over here. And there's the next page 254. Oh no, I'm sorry. That's sorry. Page 250, 255. Page 255. A short Mitzudos David. Tsar Vitzidon are neighbors. They're the north. The Ganvu Kitanehem. They kidnapped the children of Klal Yisrael. Umichadum Levnei Hayavonim far away. Leman Yirchaku Migvulam Leval Yigule Hadavar. I told you. He's saying something over here. Not the Pshut Shal Mikra. It's interesting. The Radak Mitzudos, who normally says the Pshut Shal Mikra, is saying something a bit different. The Pshuta Shal Mikra, I told you, was Leman Harchikam Yal Gvulam, so that they should never return. Someone's going to say that in a few moments in the Mefarshim. They should never return. That's not what he says. He says it should be a secret. They should not be subject to Hague, Court of Law, International Court of Law for kidnapping, okay, trafficking, child, Hague. Okay, they should not be subject to any international scrutiny of what they've done. No one should know. If you sell the children to the locals, it's going to become revealed. If you sell a faraway, they just disappear. Don't look at me. I don't know what happened to them. They just disappeared. So that's how he learned Pshat in the Pasuk. Look at Rashi. Rashi, Pasuk. Is there a Rashi on this Pasuk?
No.
Hagmul atem mishalmim. Now, you know something? I left out a very important Rashi. We actually did not do this. Let's just go back to Pasuk Dal. Go back to this Pasuk Dal and Rashi. The very important Rashi. Wait, I forgot to say. Page 252. Back before Hagmul atem mishalmim, ze hagmul shenosan shlomo lichiram melech tsar eshrim ir. Okay, very important. Rashi, when it comes to Tsar v'tzidon, who was Tsar? This is something very important about the Tsar v'tzidon. Tsar and Sidon built the Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech hired them. They had the best craftsmen, the skilled laborers. They had skills that we did not have, believe it or not.
And
they had
materials.
And materials, raw materials, wood, the quarry, whatever they needed, they had. So Tsar v'Tzidon was recruited by Shlomo HaMelech to build the Beis HaMikdash. How did Shlomo HaMelech repay them? He gave them a gift, 20 cities. There were cities, were they in Eretz Yisrael, maybe? Were they cities? They're not? They were higher up?
That doesn't
seem logical. Oh, that's logical. So they were colonies. Shlomo HaMelech, Eretz Yisrael, they conquered territory that was not part of the Gevulei Soaretz.
Otherwise it would be Aser.
Now they go give to a god, Lo Sechonim, but it's not Lo Sechonim because he's giving it for a reason to build as an exchange for the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah,
still in all, it's not so simple. You're right. So let's assume that for sake of simplicity that the Klal Yisrael, they conquered territory outside the Gevulei Soaretz, in the north. It's not part of the Gevulei Soaretz.
Could be
whoever it was. It was their territory. It was the territory of Klal Yisrael. But it was not the Eretz Yisrael Mamish. But it was property owned by Klal Yisrael. And Shlomo HaMelech gave 20 of these cities as payment to Tzidon, to Tsar, and Tzidon Chira Melech Tsar, as payment for his services in building the Beis HaMikdash.
Was that right, that Shlomo Yehudi is going to build the Beis HaMikdash?
Well, he had no choice.
I understand.
He had no choice. What can I say? I don't know. I mean,
was it the right thing to do?
I mean, obviously, we don't hear.
No, I understand that.
Yeah, today you have no choice.
I understand
we
that.
Don't. It seems. I'm not aware, not that I know anything, not that anyone criticized them for doing this. Obviously, there's a certain pride in that it should be built by Jewish hands. Right? Like I told you this once about the Yom Yisrael Avenue J. They have a new building there. And I told you, I was shocked. The guy who put up the steel. And when they were finishing the steel on the new building, I just happened to pass by. I don't know why I was even there. And the guy there, he starts having a conversation with me. And he says to me, Gesundheit, and he looks like a goy, as a goy can be. As goy as a goy can be. And he says to me, you know something, I'm Jewish. He tells me, I'm Jewish, and I'm very, very proud that I put up in this building every single piece of steel. Every single beam in this building I put up, I'm Jewish, and I'm proud that I had a part in building a synagogue. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. I remember when Chaim Berlin, and I was a little kid in Chaim Berlin, they built the building Coney Island Avenue, so through recess, we will go down the block to watch the construction. To me, it was fascinating. It's massive cranes, steel, and the people who put up the steel, they were the lowest of the low. The nivel pair that came out of their mouth, and the things, I mean, it's unbelievable who these guys were. And they would schmooze with us. They would schmooze. These guys were the lowest of the low. And they were hanging, they were mamish to risk their lives to put up, you know what they do, these guys, how they go up there. It's unbelievable what they do over there. And we watched them. It was a good time. It was a very interesting thing to learn. You know, construction, fascinating. I remember one time, it was unbelievable. And I remember the form. The form was a little more respected. The guy in charge, I remember one time, they put up this beam, and it just didn't fit. Everything was gecheshben, all computerized. It didn't, and they were mama struggling back and forth until the guy, they came to the conclusion that the people who made the beams and sent them on the trucks made a mistake. It's the wrong size. And because this was the wrong size, they couldn't continue. And I remember the nivel pair coming out. That's it. Because they're going to lose money, because that's it. They have to stop. They have to be a very big delay. They got to call up the guy and send. They have to go make a new beam and send a new beam on the truck and this and that. And they can't do anything until they finish. Who knows? Is that a covet that a yeshiva should be built the steel. You don't have a choice. Kachi darkoy shalom. You don't have a choice. That's the way it is. But yet, when Hashkocha Pratis allows that the guy who puts up the steel is Jewish, and not only is he Jewish, he knows he's Jewish, and not only that, he has pride. Ad Geitach that he tells us to, I don't even know about it. That's a special Hashkocha. That's a very special, that's unique. That's a very rare Hashkocha. I'm not going to say Chaim and Blin didn't have their own Hashkocha Pratis. Of course they did. Their own Hashkocha Pratis stories. Whatever it was. It's not like, whatever. But still, you know, there's something to it. These are inspirational story. Okay. So over here, now over here, this Brisle Rashi, Hagmul Atem Mishalmin, Zer Hagmul Shnos, and the Rashi over here says, Hagmul Atem Mishalmin, are you punishing me? Zeru Hagmul Shnosan Shlomo L'chira Melech Tzar, Estrim Ir. So what does Rashi over here mean by this? Gmul means payment. Payment. Now it's not really so clear what Rashi here means. What is Rashi over here coming to say? It means what it means over here is that we do know this is a fact. This Rashi is really quoting that Saul was not happy with the 20 cities. He was insulted. Shlomo HaMelech hired Saul to build the Beis HaMikdash. He did it. And then Shlomo HaMelech, now it's time to pay the balance. Okay, contractor comes, I got to give you a check. What's the check? He gave him 20 cities. Tsar went to inspect, it says in the Malachim, he went to inspect the 20 cities that Shlomo HaMelech gave him, and he was very disappointed. He felt that he was cheated. He says, this will you give me? These cities are garbage. These cities, they're not worth anything in my eyes. They're not, I want something better than this. This is not, we hear say 20 cities, and he's like, wow, right? But Tsar felt that what he received as payment was not did not correspond, was not equal to the service that he provided. Oh, it's exactly what Rashi, now it's not really clear what Rashi means, but this is one interpretation of Rashi. Maybe Tsar Vitzida, the reason why you're coming to start up with the Jewish food was because you're punishing me, Hagmul Atem Mishalmim, you're frustrated that the 20 cities you received, its payment was not good enough. So you're coming now to take revenge against me.
The
great-grandchildren are coming now to take revenge that we've been cheated. Our great-great-great-grandparents, they work like slaves to build the Beis HaMikdash. And what do we have out of it? We have these cities that are going under, that are no good. So therefore, Hashem said, is that what it's all about? Is that you're coming over here to torture my people? Why? Why does a person do something? Why are you causing pain? Is it because you have complaints? I told you until now the Pshut Shel Mikra is, did I ever do anything? All the Mefarshim, somehow we overlooked this Rashi. All the Mefarshim learned the Pshat and the Pasuk is, did I ever do you harm? That you have tainus against me? That you're coming to go and take revenge? What did I ever do to you? That's the Pshut Shel Mikra. Rashi is not saying that. Rashi is saying maybe indeed there is a cause. There is some epis, there is something. What is that? Maybe you're still, after all these years, you're still not satisfied with how you have been paid for your labor. I've given you 20 cities as payment for your services. You're not satisfied. So now you're coming to destroy the, you're coming to start up. You're coming to start up with us when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, whatever, when there's problems. You're taking advantage because you feel you're entitled because you were never paid for your services. Hagmul Atem Mishalmin. What do you mean?
Mishalmin.
You're coming, but see, until that was a rhetorical question. Is, did I ever do anything to you bad that now it's proper for you to come and take revenge against me, to go pay me back, payday? According to Rashi, yeah. Well, it's yes and no. Rashi, I'm saying, is that what's bothering you? That the 20 cities you got were not enough? Is that what it's all about? Zehu, this refers to the Gemul, Shenosan Shlomo, Lechira Melech Tzar, Eshem Ir. And what does Rashi mean? So we're suggesting it's not so simple as Rashi. I think the article in English, I saw in the article blue, he has Mahalach. I'm not sure what I'm saying. I don't remember. It was a few days when I was preparing for this the Rashi, and I looked in the article blue. He explained this a little bit more, but I think what he said over there was, I'm not sure exactly what he said there, but here is an idea, is that you still have tainus on me for the 20 cities? Is that what it's all about? We settled this already. This was already settled in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. He settled the issue. Well, how he settled it is not for now. He did settle it. He did settle it. Yeah, somehow he did settle it. It was a very cryptic conversation there between Tsar and Shlomo in regard to these 20 cities. Okay, whatever it is. It was settled. So Hashem's saying, you're still not happy? Is that what it's all about? I'm sorry. It's not an excuse. If you still have a complaint, whatever what you're doing to Klal Yisrael now does not correspond to the degree of trouble you're causing. Don't use this as an excuse, because it's not an excuse. But at least Rashi is coming to open up this idea, is that this is where it's rooted, the hatred. Kal Mehero Lashon Dusuk. So if we did over here, the struggle we have to do next time.